Welcome to the Michael Rivera What Really Happened radio show.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to Hour 2. Welcome to our ground affiliates out there listening to us on for real radio waves out there in America. We are working to get our second hour guest, Omid Mamarian, on the air right now. There seems to be some difficulty with the telephone lines. And while we're doing that, while we're waiting for him, we're going to talk about some of the other news that is coming down the pike. As I mentioned before in Hour 1, we're talking about the economy and this issue over which candidate, you know, is going to have the best tax plan. And they're pushing percentages back and forth. And, you know, the Republicans are terrified that they are going to lose the tax cuts for the rich that Bush gave them during the Bush administration. So they want McCain in there to make sure that they can keep the tax cuts. Barack Obama is being a little bit more honest, saying that, you know, the government has to have money to fund certain things. And it's the classic conservative versus Democrat argument. But I think we've gone way, way beyond being able to fix what's wrong with this country with just a few percentage points tax difference here and there. And I think the time has come for the American people to realize that the only way to save this economy is drastic, drastic tax cuts across the board for everybody, rich and poor, black and white, men and women, everybody. And I'm talking major tax cuts, one-third to one-half, at all levels of all government, and just start paring back like that, because otherwise, you know, we're looking at the situation. The U.S. Federal Highway Fund has run out of money. There may be no more highway projects for the balance of the year. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are being taken over by the government, which means a huge taxpayer-funded bailout there. FDIC just closed another bank, the Silver State Bank in Nevada, the one that used to be John McCain's son was on the board of directors there. And every solution proposed by corporations or by the government basically involves going back to the American people and gouging them for just a little bit more money. We had Bill Gross just Friday was saying that the U.S. government has to start buying these bad assets out of the financial markets in order to prevent a financial tsunami. And, of course, he's looking at the fact that he himself was $5 billion into the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac debacle. But the bottom line is that with one out of every 10 American homeowners behind on their mortgage payments or actually in foreclosure, shifting more tax burden onto the American people is going to create the financial tsunami, because you're going to have more homes going into foreclosure and more bad assets that the government will buy up and then charge to the American people. And the bottom line is the American taxpayer are going to be forced to pay for everything, for every mistake, every bad planning over the last couple of years, at a time when our own government gave tax breaks to corporations to transfer high-paying manufacturing jobs to other countries. So more taxes and more burden for the American people is not the solution. It's not going to work. It's the first thing everybody thinks of in government and corporations, because they view the American people as this bottomless pit of money to be dipped into whenever convenient. But we've run out of money out here. We've got people that are making the choice between eating and having the necessary medicines to stay alive. We're going into a very hard winter where people are going to be making very, very difficult choices about staying warm and feeding themselves. This is not a population that's got extra money for luxuries like war and propping up other foreign governments. It is time for a drastic reduction in the size of all government, and definitely in the size of the military, because war is a luxury that financially strapped nations like ours can no longer afford. It dead ends money, especially a Cold War, because you spend money and spend money and spend money to build things that don't generate any further revenue. It's a poor investment. It is a cash sink. It makes everybody poorer. Go all the way back to President Eisenhower and his farewell address, where he talks about every bullet made is food taken from the mouth of a child. Every bomb that is made is a family that has to spend another night outside in the cold. And he's absolutely right. At the end of World War II, when we were the only nation whose industrial base had not been bombed into rubble, and we could do no wrong, and we became incredibly wealthy because the whole world had to come to us for ball bearings and motors and machinery. A huge military was something that we could grudgingly afford. We can't do that anymore. The rest of the world does not come to the United States to buy our products. We have no products to sell other than bombs and bullets and weapons. And even they are not performing very well. So as I look at the reality of this country and all the retail vacancies and all the people who are being forced to move to smaller accommodations, and then I look at the government saying, well, we can fix the problem. We'll just do a taxpayer-funded bailout. I say, it's not going to work. They start digging their claws into that population to scoop up a little bit more money. They're getting wood shavings from the bottom of that barrel because it is really that dire out here. Now, speaking of money and grabbing and grasping, there are new developments coming out of the Central Asian wars, as it were. Apparently angered by the invasions of the U.S. across their border, Pakistan has now closed all supply routes into Afghanistan. And I pointed this out a couple of days ago, that the United States has been doing to Pakistan that which everybody made a really huge stink claiming Russia did to Georgia. And yet nobody was saying anything. I mean, the media has been screaming, oh, Russia invaded Georgia without their permission. Ooh, bad, bad, bad Russia. The U.S. has been doing the same thing to Pakistan, going across the border, killing civilians. There have been huge, huge riots in Pakistan. And the Pakistani government has said, well, if you're going to, you know, treat us like an enemy, fine, we're closing all the roads. This puts the United States military in Afghanistan dependent on supply routes coming through Russia into Afghanistan. And right now, Russia is not too happy with the United States because of what happened in Georgia. And so whoever is doing the grand strategic planning of our military adventures in that part of the world, and maybe there isn't anybody, they have blown it royally because our position is now so, I'm sorry for stammering. I'm talking to our control room technician over trying to get our guest, and it looks like we've had a problem there. So anyway, whoever's in charge of the planning in that part of the world, they've blown it. The United States is seen as weak, being unable to function properly in Iraq. Iraq is openly starting to talk about making oil deals with Russia. We're losing the wars. We're losing the wars in Afghanistan, in Iraq. They're trying to put a positive face on it because of the election coming up. But the reality is, we have lost those wars. We've lost them politically, and we knew we were going to lose them politically because every stated objective for those wars turned out to be a lie. So there's no way to win those politically. And economically, we've lost those wars because these countries are turning their backs on the U.S. and saying, we're going to deal with Russia because they're closer and they're far more capable and they're treating us better. There's this big stink about in the Ukraine about how the Ukraine is in trouble because their pro-Western government is starting to fail. Well, maybe from the point of view of the Ukrainian people, a pro-Western government is a liability. They've got to be looking at how the United States government is treating the American people, spying on us, reading our emails, listening to our phone calls, following us around, fondling us at every single airport. Why would anybody want a government like that in their own country? So from the point of view of the Ukrainian people, an anti-Western government is probably going to be a significant improvement. I know that I would find it an improvement to have a government that isn't peeking into my email and listening to my phone calls and following me around and groping my wife at the airports, not to mention dropping my laptops. All right, we're going to take a break here, and we're going to have a couple of commercials. We're going to come back. Looks like we're on Open Phone Saturday for the second hour of our show, so call in at 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And here we are. Sorry, I was just taking a little time to get back from the phones. We've connected with our guest. He's going to be calling in on another line here real soon, and we will be all set up to go. While we're waiting for Omid to call in on that, I just wanted to talk about a couple more things here. And since we're going to be talking about Israel and Palestine and the Free Gaza Project, there was a video that came out a couple of days ago, and I put it up on our website, whatreallyhappened.com, showing the Israeli Navy shooting at Gaza fishermen and some international volunteers who were on the boats. Now, the reason this is an issue is, in theory, since Israel withdrew from the Gaza Strip, the Palestinians are supposed to have access to their own waters in order to fish, in order to feed their people. But the Israeli Navy has been making a practice of basically shooing the Gaza boats back to Gaza and not allowing them to fish their own waters. Presumably, Israeli fishing boats are coming down there with their dragnets to basically fish out the water for their own benefit. And it's all very clearly illegal. Under international law, the Gazans are supposed to be able to fish Gazan waters. And for the first time, somebody got this on videotape, and it's very obvious. The Israeli patrol boats come up, they fire machine gun rounds at the Gazan fishing boats. At the very end of this video, the Israeli patrol boat rushes by the Gazan fishing boat in a sharp bank at high power so that the wash from the boat, the wake from the boat, literally comes over the side of the Gazan fishing boat, trying to swamp it, trying to sink it. And, you know, very obviously, not only illegal, but immoral behavior. We have the population of Gaza is just at starvation levels. And to simply not allow them to fish to feed themselves, that's a war crime. That's a crime against humanity, to deliberately starve a population like that when there is no state of war that exists between. There's supposed to be a ceasefire right now. And yet here you have these Israeli patrol boats opening fire on fishing boats. On fishing boats. Anyway, apparently, all right, we're still waiting for the call to come in here, so let's catch a few other things for the news. All right, the Sarah Palin situation continues to sort of deteriorate. There are more and more stories circulating around. Okay, I'm getting a sense there may be a problem with our phone lines. We haven't had any on-air callers on the show, and apparently our guest is unable to reach through as well. So, all right, well, I'm just going to continue the show until we can get our guest on. And if we're not able to get him, yeah, I think he just called back. Okay, all right, going on to the show here a little bit. And I'm sorry for all the hemming and hawing, but we're dealing with some technical issues here. Okay, we're trying to sort this out. Apparently, there is a problem with getting through on the phones here. All right, let's go over to Science and Health and talk for just a little while here while we try and sort out this mess from this end. Apparently, up in Canada, as you know, longtime listeners know, I have a real problem with computer hackers. Many of the Patriot websites are under constant hacking attack. It's a tremendous annoyance, and basically, it's a way of not fighting fair. They can't win the war of ideas and logic and facts, so they basically just try very underhanded attacks to get in and take down websites that they don't agree with. And, of course, these are people who are not very honorable anyway, and it's not surprising to find out these same people are engaged in criminal activity. So they just arrested, up in Montreal, they arrested an Israeli hacker by the name of Ehud Tenenbaum, and three of his cohorts. And what they were doing along with their various other issues is they would go out to a store and they'd buy a debit card like you see on the racks, you know, $20 iTunes card. Then they would break into the financial institution that issued the card and change the value of the card to be like several thousand dollars. Then they'd go and use the card to buy things. And they got caught doing it, and apparently they made some $2 million with this fraudulent scheme. And they got arrested. Now, three of the co-conspirators have been released, presumably on bail. But Ehud Tenenbaum is being kept in jail. And all I can say is good and congratulations, because it is amazing the amount of money that computer crime is costing. And yet, the government seems to turn a blind eye to it. Finally, I would love to welcome Omid Mamarian to our show here. Omid, welcome to the show. Aloha after long last.
Thank you very much for having me.
And I've been vamping till we get you on here. And the reason I wanted to have you on the show, you know, obviously your work as a blogger and trying to build public awareness for the situation in Palestine. A lot of people know of your name. They've been to your website. And especially now with all the brouhaha over the Free Gaza Project with the boats and Israel's refusal to allow some of those people to leave Gaza over land, necessitating another boat crossing from Cyprus to pick them up. It just seems, and correct me if I'm wrong, but sometimes these kind of actions, together with shooting at the fishing boats we were talking about before you came online, Israel comes across as petty and vindictive and mean. It's not like they're accomplishing anything meaningful with these kind of tactics.
Yeah, but I think the way that they are going forward, it's not going to end to any kind of settlement with, or agreement with Palestinians. And there is no prospect for peace in the region with the current situation and circumstances.
Well, I would agree with that. In fact, a lot of observers have come forward to say that they see Israel's actions as intending to prevent any kind of settlement, that Israel on one hand will proclaim that they want peace and understanding and the rest of it, and yet we're seeing all these little actions that are intended to goad and provoke the Palestinians. I remember, you know, I think it was about a year, 2 years ago, this incident where this Israeli gunboat just opened fire on a Gaza beach without warning and killed this family. And then, and then when the Palestinians get upset, Israel says, oh, look, they're getting hostile again. And it almost seems like there's this constant effort to try and provoke a response that can be used to justify further Israeli repression on the people of Gaza. And one thing that's really obvious to me is back when Ariel Sharon... Okay, we got to take a break here. Hold that thought. I want to come back and talk about the so-called disengagement and having your cake and eat it, too, after we come back from these words from our sponsors. This is What Really Happened. I'm your host, Michael Rivero. If you want to join us on air, 800-259-9231. We'll be right back.
If your body isn't feeling too well these days, you're gonna start taking this hemp, I say. Go to hempusa.org. You may not like what I'm about to say, but you know I'm gonna say it anyway. The government doesn't want the best for you. They keep you down, they keep you blue. They starve your body for all its nutrients. They won't let you grow industrial hemp. It really doesn't make any kind of sense when it's so healthy for the world and useful for you, my friends. I hope Mr. Bush will hear this song, for the heart of America wants this one. Go to hempusa.org. If you're a truther, an anarchist, or renegade, you only want things that God has made. Go to hempusa.org. We offer free shipping anywhere in the States. Go to hempusa.org.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We've got our technical issues sorted out. We're on the phone here with Omid Memari, and we're talking about Palestine, whether Israel is really sincere about wanting to find some kind of an accommodation. And we're working on our little technical issues. Apparently, the giant mutant hamster that lives in the little wire cage behind the mixer that powers all of it, he was unhappy. He hadn't been fed. So we fed the giant mutant hamster, and everything is back running now. So if you want to call in, go ahead. Again, the number is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. And, Omid, before we went to the break, I was starting to talk about the so-called Israeli disengagement from Gaza. And this is back when Ariel Sharon was still in charge over there. And there was this kind of implied deal that Israel was going to pull out of Gaza completely and say, okay, this is for the Palestinians, if we would sort of go nudge, nudge, wink, wink, as they started building more settlements over on the West Bank. And that started to move forward. And at the time, I predicted that once those settlements were in the West Bank, and there was no turning back from that, that Israel would try and find some excuse to go back in and reoccupy the Gaza Strip, because it's a lot of beachfront property. There are oil and natural gas resources just off the coast there that Israel covets. And it does really seem like, for all the talk about disengagement and letting Gaza have self-rule and all the rest of it, that we're back to the same old situation of Israel just trying to encroach on Gaza, find an excuse to go back in, certainly compromise the civilian government and co-opt it. We saw where, you know, Hamas won this popular election, and Israel is basically saying, we're not going to deal with you, we're only going to deal with these people over here. And it really, like, seems that for all intents and purposes, as far as the Gazans themselves are concerned, there really hasn't been much of a disengagement. There's still bullets flying and tanks rolling through the streets down there.
Yes, it seems so. It seems that there's a very strong trend in Israel to pursue this path at a time everybody knows that any kind of agreement with Palestinians and going toward peace is impossible without being without standing on the previous agreement and the promise of you know, a kind of how can I phrase that? That to just to believe that, you know, you have to have a kind of win-win situation with Palestinians, and it's not you cannot go and get something from them by provoking them, getting their land, and continue what they are doing now. Yeah.
Well, I think another way of putting it is very simply is it takes two parties to make peace, but only one to make war. And the bottom line is, you know, is there sincerity in a push for peace on both sides? Obviously, from the Gazans and the Palestinian side, that's what they want. They want lives. They want to run their little businesses. They want to take care of their children. They want to be able to go walk about the streets without getting shot and killed. And I don't think they want much more than that, really. But it just seems, I mean, certainly to judge from the map of Israel since its declaration 60 years ago, that, you know, Israel is basically following a program of Lebensraum, which is a little more land and a little more land and a little more land. And certainly
yes,
a separation or security barrier doesn't even follow the green line. They pushed it even further into Palestinian territory. And after 60 years of this kind of practice and just this abysmal record of constant pushing and encroachment, it's very hard to take Israel at its word about anything that it says it wants. You really must rely on what they are doing, what they are demonstrating. And,
yes. At the same time, you know, we should bring this issue to a bigger context, that, you know, what they are doing now is just promoting hate and hatred among the Islamic countries in the region. And what Israel is, you know, the way that Israelis are, you know, behaving in Gaza just deepen the crisis. And for the years to come, it seems, you know, more difficult to trust Israelis, you know, in any kind of peace agreement. So I think that hurts the peace process, any kind of, you know, like actually dialogue over these issues. It makes it much more difficult. And so I think in the long run, you know, nothing comes out of it, out of this, you know, current of this current situation.
Well, you know, one thing for nations to get along, certainly in the modern world, you've got to have leadership that is trustworthy, that stands by their treaties. When a nation says, we will do this, you have to be able to rely on that. It is impossible for international commerce to proceed if you don't have leaders of countries whose word is reliable and dependable. And here in the United States, we're facing a crisis because so many of our elected leaders seem to view lying as not only acceptable but a necessary tool of their statecraft, where they're saying one thing and doing another, and anybody who points out that disconnect is being treated like, well, you're very impolite to point that out. You know, how dare you, point out the fact that I'm being less than truthful. In a lot of ways, our government has become as the old Soviet Union was shortly before its demise, and that may in fact be an indicator that the current U.S. government is, its days are numbered. And in one way, certainly for Israel and Palestine, that would certainly change the equation, because right now Israel can pretty much do whatever it wants and count on the United States blocking any Security Council resolutions against it at the United Nations.
And you can see how it affects the whole, region. You know, in the past at least 8 years, the United States' interference in any kind of conflict or any kind of crisis in the region, you know, has been faced with a mistrust of the countries in the region. And so that's why, you know, taking side in this conflict, which is very deep and it's very multilateral and very has lots of different dimensions. Taking side in this conflict, you know, has taken the U.S. as people do not trust the United States anymore. So it's 25 years from now that the U.S. could affect positively in this process, but now it has changed a lot. So it's hard to expect from the United States to have a kind of positive role at this time. You see what happened for the Minneapolis conference, and nothing came out of that conference.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the reasons why we're seeing so many nations in that part of the world start to reject pro-Western governments is because they now equate pro-Western with pro-Israel. They see how Israel behaves. I mean, there was actually a Security Council resolution that got passed, you know, even the U.S. voted for it, saying, please don't fly over Lebanon anymore, and yet Israel continues to do so. So even when there is a U.N. resolution trying to control them, Israel ignores it, and we continue to support this. We've got a caller on the line, but I'll tell you what, I'm going to hold the caller into the next segment because we're almost at the bottom of this one. Basically, right now, the United States is so locked in with Israel right now for whatever reason. A lot of people suspect there's blackmail, bribery. Who knows? I don't even care anymore. We're watching our presidential election in this country, and it seems like the news has dominated whether this or that candidate will be good or not for Israel. And we're not even hearing if this or that candidate is going to be good for America, such as the focus. And meanwhile, we're losing influence in that part of the world. Whether it's Afghanistan or Iraq or Iran, they're moving away from us, and Russia is moving in. This is a foreign policy disaster for the United States, not just for Gaza. We got to take a break here. We'll be back with Omid Mamarian after these words from our sponsors.
He's scared, he's lonely, and he knows he screws up everything in life. But I guess that's the way it goes when you're the Antichrist.
America. Welcome back to the last segment of our show today. The mutant hamster is happy. We've got a caller on the line, Ruth from Mount Prospect. Aloha, Ruth. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Mike.
Hi, I can hear you now. What's on your mind?
Well, the fishermen in Gaza create a problem because Israel wants to put ocean drilling rigs for natural gas there, and they're in the way. The natural gas that Gaza has, Israel has been selling to Egypt and the Brits, and keeping the money. The Gazans get 10% of the money, and Israel keeps 90%.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I have a problem with is trying to find documentation on the oil in the Sinai. Chris Boland told me about it during his trial over a year ago, and I can't find any documentation on the web. I'll keep looking, and thank you for your guest. I'm enjoying his time.
Well, thank you very much. And before we get back to the guests, I want to respond to what you're saying, because I'm not sure that the Gazan fishing boats are a problem for the drilling platforms for the natural gas, because as I understand it, those drilling platforms often become the center of an artificially stimulated ecology. The disturbing of the seafloor underneath the footing will actually create a nutrient plankton bloom that will actually create more fish, more seafood. And as long as you're not snarling each other's lines and everything, the drilling platforms are actually going to improve the fishing conditions around the area, assuming there are no leakages, obviously, of oil and gas. So I think there's an opportunity for them to peacefully coexist. There just seems to be an attitude on one side that this is all ours, so get out of here. And as you say, Israel is selling Gazans natural gas. And, you know, we don't know how much, Gaza is actually going to get of the money. Again, it gets back to that issue of, can Israel be trusted? And here you have the United Nations telling Israel, please don't overfly Lebanon. And yet Israel goes booming across there, breaking the sound barrier at low altitude, which means they're scaring the heck out of the Lebanese, breaking windows probably, and causing other damage. And it's just mean-spiritedness. It's not accomplishing any strategic or tactical necessity. It's certainly not leading to any kind of commercial interest between the two places. It's just another provocation. So, Omid, what's your comments about that?
I agree with you. That's a kind of provocation. And, I can say that. And, I'm just going to come back to my last comment that even you consider that Israel is good, this is not something in the long run for the good of Israelis, for the
no.
security and for the good of Israeli people, it's better just to, stand on the treaties as you mentioned, and do not do things that, jeopardize their previous agreement. And I'm going to go back to another issue that's, probably in a bigger perspective is affecting these provocations. Actually, these provocations are causing these kind of things, and that's a kind of new movement of radicalism in the region that is based on these kind of provocations and hatred. And they think that behind this, hatred, there is a kind of goodwill, which is not something I think Israelis are looking for. And we should bring it to consideration for the years to come.
Well, I think the bottom line here is that what we are seeing is Israel, under pressure of world opinion, will make a deal or an agreement to share resources with Palestine. Then they look for a reason to break that agreement or ignore it and put the blame on somebody else. We've had 60 years of the same kind of pattern over and over again. People are catching on. It's the same trick over and over again. And they expect that we're all going to go along and fall for it again and politely say, oh, yes, it's all the Palestinians' fault. And if we don't agree, then they just scream anti-Semite at us. But they've overused that one so much that it's burned out. Nobody cares anymore when somebody screams anti-Semite. They've really worn it out. And as much as our own country, Israel needs to start thinking some new solutions to the old problems, because the old problems are not going to go away. They haven't gone away with the old methods. So it's time to change methods. It's time to learn new ways of getting along with their neighbors.
I think the more the United States takes side in this conflict, in this crisis, the more Israelis and Palestinians get far away from a kind of a solution that brings peace to the region.
I agree, absolutely. The United States should never have taken sides on this. It has not only exacerbated the situation between Israel and Palestine, it has lost us prestige in the rest of the world. It is a strategic foreign policy disaster in the rest of Central Asia and the Middle East. We are in dire trouble right now, and we are alienating all those nations on whose oil we are dependent. And we've just proven in Afghanistan and Iraq, we can't militarily conquer the oil anymore. We better start making nice and making friends with these people, or they're going to start shutting off the valve. And then we're really going to be in trouble.
It might work in the United States as a kind of presidential elections, you know, slogans. It might work here and for the election process, but you know, on the ground, in the region, it doesn't work at all, and it has not been working, you know, for years.
No, I don't think anybody in this country thinks it's working either. There's a lot of bullheadedness in supporting the current ongoing policies. People don't want to admit that they were wrong. Is Ruth still on the line? Ruth, are you there?
Yes.
Did you have any final comments before we let you go?
No, thank you very much. I enjoy your show.
All right. Well, thank you for calling, and call back in again. Okay, that was Ruth. Now, getting back to Omid, we're almost out of time on our show today, and I'm sorry we lost so much time on the technical issues. We're going to have you back in the future. But just in wrapping up, what do you see is the best future course of action for Americans to be doing to try and reduce the tensions and hostilities between Israel and Palestine? What can we be doing right now to make things better?
I think the United States should see both sides in the same way and recognize both sides' rights in this crisis. What we see here most of the times is just looking to the crisis from the Israeli point of view, which is not, which does not help at all. And I think for the long run solution, we need to consider that. And also we have to take a look at Iran-Israeli relations. And I think it can help a lot if they can engage Iran in this process and Israelis, Palestinians, Iranians, and Lebanese, you know, they just come to a kind of agreement over the mutual issues. And then so every party can use its influence to just go toward a kind of comprehensive agreement and comprehensive, solution.
Okay.
Without bringing the other parties that have influence in the region, they have money and they have influence, you know, they have people, they have armed, whatever, without bringing them to the negotiation table and to the process, I think it doesn't work, and it has not been working for years. And the U.S. is trying to marginalize or put some of these parties out of the process, but you see they have influence in the process, and nothing comes out of these, you know, negotiations and conferences.
Okay, Omid, we're out of time. What is your website, real quick?
It's omidmemorian.blogspot.com.
All right, I'm going to link to that. I'm also going to link to Jack Shepard's website from hour number one. This brings our show for today to an end. We'll be back here Monday, starting a whole new week of mayhem, watching the political process unfold heading into the new elections. So for the weekend, stay safe, be well, hug your loved ones. Aloha, America.